This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Please, take my hand. Now, open your mind to me. Please, open your mind. Open your mind. Open your mind.
This is Monica Perez, waking Atlanta up to the true threats to our liberty every Saturday from 3 to 6 right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Many apologies for totally bizarre technical glitches before the break. I think those troubles are behind us now, but I don't think I gave Coach Vandermeer justice. I won't belabor that story, but I had been talking about how when a very important thing, and this relates to the next story I want to talk about not having plea bargain, about having plea bargains is, or somebody gets killed in the perpetration of a crime or goes and suicides behind that thing, like these mass shootings, very, very, very few. Very few of these big impact stories are adjudicated in a court of law. And the few that are, it's not live streaming. It's you do not see what is going on. And what the problem with that is, you are told the circumstances, you are told the facts that led to this unacceptable outcome. And you are led to embrace a policy solution that you would not otherwise embrace. It's the old Rahm Emanuel doctrine. If you have a trial by jury, you vet the facts. You vet the facts. And then you see what the real problems were. And if it was in many cases, not a failure of the law, but a failure in the execution of the law, in which case that's a very different solution from there's a failure in our fundamental legal principles. And I believe that our fundamental legal principles are sound and that they work with our foundational documents. And that if you mess with them, you really are going to mess with the ability to protect yourself from government. This is supposed to be a self-limiting government. It's not really self-limiting. It's a pushback. It's a pushback government. They can't get away with this stuff. So this thing with the college admission scandal seems like a complete scam and abuse of power to me. I don't know what policy agenda they're trying to push here. But with this Stanford coach, there was no financial loss to the university. I don't even know if anybody benefited whatsoever. The coach didn't benefit. He just gave the money to his program like he was supposed to. This guy Singer walked away in this one case with $6.5 million. So that guy is the perp, yet the FBI sits with him and tries to take down these other people. And dime on a dollar, there's going to be a policy agenda coming out of this. Could be free college. Right? It could just be the socialist agenda. I mean, Binkley, you saw this. You've dug into this with me, and I think that you see what I'm saying here. Like, there's something up.
They're going to call for a change to the complete university system, probably.
Yeah, admissions. They've already started messing with the SATs in a way where it talks about, like, it adds points for, like, where you came from.
Yeah.
Which is all already in the admissions process. And let me tell you, my origins had challenges in getting. I understand completely that people with privilege, people born to the manor, are at an incredible advantage every step of the way. Because starting with sending you to the right schools, teaching you how to take tests, telling you how to behave in an interview, having connections to get you internships so it doesn't look like you work for daddy, but you're working for daddy's friend, but there's no paper trail for that. All these things I faced. I dropped out of high school. I went to community college and I ended up at Harvard 100%, in my opinion, A, because I had that kind of moxie, but really none of that mattered. None of that would have meant anything. Dropping out of high school and going to community college isn't amazing unless you get like great scores on the SATs, you know, like you have to have that entree and that is there. And if you start messing with that, it's not going to be progressive. It's going to be regressive.
Yeah, it's like equity of test scores. Everybody has a right to the same test score.
Right, but
almost.
It's your only hope of clawing your way out of the gutter is if you are going to be useful to the machine. You know, you want them to give you the hand up and take their chances that you're going to help them. I mean, that's what it's all about. They want you with them. I mean, it's about feeding the machine. It's about producing for them. And there's nothing wrong with that. I like the free market system. I liked being a banker. I worked my butt off and I got paid for it. And they were right to pick me because I had the capacity to produce for them. But they wouldn't really have known that if everybody, then after me, like everybody got 1600s and I was scratching my head trying to find people to recruit into my investment banking firm because everybody had 1600s.
Yeah, the new SAT thing is going to be called an adversity score. Like a sliding scale based on your background, which has nothing to do with actual education.
And I would like to know what my adversity score would be compared with Stacey Abrams, for example.
Interesting.
Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, my guess is I would score as having less adversity. And let me just tell you, I have 8 brothers and sisters, and I can tell you every single one of them. I mean, some of them made it, some of them didn't, but it was just tooth and nail fighting to, and it's because, like, I just see it as like immigrants, our grandparents were immigrants, and both of my grandmothers were maids, and then, did I ever tell you this, when I was applying for J.P. Morgan, a job at J.P. Morgan, I said, oh, my mother was a maid for J.P. Morgan, my grandmother was a maid for J.P. Morgan, and she said, the downtown office? I said, no, the person. My grandmother only would work where they had a lot of books. So she was a maid at Cornell so that she could have access to the library. And she was a maid at J.P. Morgan, who was famous for his book collection, I think. But she thought he would have some books, and he did. And so she educated herself. But then her children had kind of trades. My mom became a practical nurse. My dad was a meat cutter, and then he owned a gas station and had 3 heart attacks. So he didn't hit the wave of the oil crunch in the 70s. So he didn't really benefit from that. But he had a chance to, you know, his father had been an entrepreneur and he had a chance to build on that. And then from there, you kind of get mainstreamed and you can claw your way out if you do well on those tests, which they have so they can see what your aptitude is for producing producing and consuming have to go hand in hand, especially in a free system. I like it.
And it would seem that this new adversity score would harm people who come from hard places and overcome more than anybody else.
This is an age old question that people, some people lose sight of and some people don't. I think there's validity to the different interpretations of it, but is Marxism focused on economic problems? Cultural Marxism focuses on identity, which is something that cannot be, quote, remedied. I mean, it's not an illness, so I would not like to call it remedied. But to the extent it's a stigma or an insurmountable obstacle, it's a problem without a solution. You cannot change your identity. So I actually think focusing on it is disempowering to the individual, and it's a scam because it's hopeless.
Absolutely. When there's no solution to it and you're promising solutions and mobilizing around it, it's a total scam.
Whereas if people are poor and suffering and their parents don't have anything to retire on or to take care of, and you can demonstrate in some objective way that you are able to produce at the highest levels, they let you into that club, and then you do have the surplus capital and the surplus. Like, I think of Ron Paul, like he had enough capital to stop being a doctor and go be a troublemaker in Washington. Now that's when then they had to, like, all right, but we need a progressive tax rate to make sure that doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
And me, you know, I mean, I didn't like I'm here at the benefit of my main job is taking care of kids, and I have this opportunity to do this, but most people can't really do it because they're really busy with the overworked full-time jobs.
Yeah, and a lot of people that come from, that overcome a lot, that start in a, you know, they struggle and they overcome, if they do not fit the right intersectionality thing, then they're going to be punished once they do reach the pinnacle. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, that's a whole nother thing. It's like that crazy, it's like the minimum wage thing. It's as if minimum wage is reserved for guys who have like six kids and nobody can work and they're all handicapped or whatever. You know, it's not like that. And wage thing, please don't even get me started. Ocasio-Cortez is against tipping, which proves 100% that her story is full of it. I was making, after taxes, $17 an hour as a waitress, like if you did the math, when I was 17. I remember thinking, oh, I'm 17 and I'm making $17 an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, after taxes and my salary, my paycheck was zero because you got paid like $2 and then the tax, they did take, after Reagan, they did take taxes out. So the paycheck was zero. It was just tips. And now they're talking about giving people $15. And what happens is the restaurant owner puts 15% on the tab. Looks like that's what you're giving, but they don't have to give that to the waitress when it's a $15 minimum.
Yeah.
They just give $15, which is always less on an hourly basis than 15% of the check she's turning.
Yeah, she's not making a lot of friends who are bartenders with that position.
Such a scam. Such a scam. You know, if I ever meet her, I'm just going to ask her one question.
What's that?
What's the difference between a sour and a flip?
Oh, you're going to test her drink knowledge.
Yes. Don't tell anybody.
Did you see that she did like a bartending shift as a promotional thing recently?
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
She must have heard me say that. This has happened to me once or twice before. Like I say something and then they fix the flaw.
Yeah.
So I was like, unless they really trained her as a bartender so that she knows all this. Dang it. I knew I shouldn't have said anything.
Well, I don't know what kind of drinks she made. There might have been simple drinks.
No, but I mean, she's smart. She could totally, it doesn't take much to figure it out. It's just that if she didn't see it coming, it would have really been great. But oh well. So I do have, when I talked about the Virginia Beach shooting, I talked about a very specific thing that nobody else talked about. And it came up this week in a follow-up. And I want to tell you about that after the break. This is Monica Perez.
Monica Perez. On News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Binkley just found something super interesting that is a, during the break, that he's been seeing lately anyway. So he found this, the Iran video purportedly proves that the story's real, our narrative is real. But the video you showed, Binkley, was that it looks totally fake, right?
Yeah, it's black and white, it's grainy, okay. And it's from a distance.
Right, okay. That makes people feel like they can't be fooled because they can tell when something isn't real.
Yeah.
So what else would make people think they couldn't be fooled?
If they are taught how to spot a deep fake.
And who might teach them that?
Well, there's a website for that. You can test your ability.
Who is promoting that website?
World Economic Forum, CNN.
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's just funny because like the World Economic Forum is they, quote they, and they are creating the deep fakes that will completely destroy. I mean, maybe that's the last straw for the jury system. Like you could have videos and be like, well, we can't be trusted because whatever. So, but you're not going to be super afraid of them if you're taught that there's a tell.
Yeah. If you think you can spot them, then you're probably going to be bamboozled by them more than others.
Yes, exactly. And the way they'll do it is maybe this. Maybe this is the way they're doing it. But they would do it exactly in this way where they have like a major thing. I think I've heard something like this recently. They'll have like a major thing that people are causes real problems because of a deep fake and a lot of people will be like, I knew that was fake. I could tell that was fake. And that will reassure them that they cannot be duped.
Yeah, yeah. False confidence.
Oh, nice. I love a little, I mean, that's a pretty digestible one, but I do like that it's something that's in, if it's given a name, it means that it's got a role.
Yeah.
And it's used. So, all right, I want to give that update about the Virginia Beach shooting and how I think that, like all these, are exploited for other reasons. So I'll get to that in a sec, 404-872-0750, 800-WSB-TALK, or you can tweet at me. I need some tweets. Let's read some tweets after the break at Monica Perez Show.
Monica Perez.
I'm not interested in fantasies. I'm interested in reality.
On News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
So I definitely want to wrap up the Stanford thing. I want to get to some tweets, but I have to just read. Did I read this paragraph on air about since he pleaded guilty? Did you hear this? Since he, this is the conclusion about this Coach Vandermeer, who read the article from the Wall Street Journal. I mean, it's awful that the guy Singer, who scammed people out of this money, who knows what punishment Singer's going to get. It breaks my heart for the Stanford coach. So since he pleaded guilty, Mr. Vandermeer and his family moved to a friend's beach house. That's nice. After he lost his lease at his Stanford housing, he enrolled in online classes at Cornell University towards a certification in project management, knowing he will probably need a new career. And this is a guy who did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
He did nothing wrong. He has to pay for the boats. He has a couple of admission slots to do that. And when he did get some money from this guy, he brought it, put it right into the department thing. Every person this guy brought him, he thought, had some sailing experience. I mean, it was, Singer was scamming these people.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like he was saying, oh, no, she's not really very good. He was saying she's good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this guy was not in on it. It's awful. And this is a function of plea bargains. If you weren't allowed to do that, and there's no damages. I mean, there's no crime here. They were trying to get the prosecutors say the outcome could mean prosecutors are facing a high bar in landing significant prison time for others where there are fundamental questions over whether the crime actually caused financial losses. There's no damages. Singer was the one who was defrauding people.
Yeah, and the news is making it like the damages is against the people who did not get into college there.
I don't even think that any that happened at all. There were the other two individuals they talk about as being part of this, of the students as being part of the scam. It says Mr. Singer returned with a second prospect in 2017, offering a financial reward if Mr. Vandermeer designated the applicant as a recruit, which prosecutors said he did. Mr. Singer sent $110,000 to the sailing program the following spring, even though the applicant chose to go to Brown. And then, so the applicant did not end up going to Stanford.
All of that?
Yes. And it says, then Mr. Singer offered three other recruits who could come in place of that student, prosecutors said. A falsified athletic profile for one, a young woman from Vegas, said she commuted to Long Beach and Newport Beach to train. She was approved as a sailing recruit, but ultimately chose Vanderbilt. Mr. Singer sent $160,000 last fall. So I don't even know if the coach recommended the two who are not followed up on. I mean, there's not one single story in this whole thing of him helping somebody unqualified to get into the school who went to the school.
So people who were accused of cheating to help their children get into a school after cheating said, you know what, we're going to go somewhere else.
Right. So my guess is those people aren't being prosecuted because they didn't end up at Stanford. It's just so screwy. But who goes to Brown or Vanderbilt? I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. I guess I don't know my rankings. So let's do some tweets, and then I'll give you the Virginia Beach thing. Let me just do the Virginia Beach thing, and then I'll give you some tweets. You give me some tweets, okay? The Virginia Beach thing is just this. When we talked about the shooting, I said, I don't think this is really about gun control. It's like the Iran Straits thing right now that's happening. They're not trying to spark a war this time. They're trying to do other stuff this time. They're trying to get ships into the Straits of Hormuz. They're trying to get the United States to be the police force that watches out for all those tankers. On our dime, by the way. So I think the gun dialectic is, in fact, the gun control versus the gun rights people. I think it is absolutely the same lever that immigration, terrorism, and the drug war are used on the right. This is what's used on the left to get them to give up on their rights. So they don't want to give up the gun rights, gun control battle, not only because it's one of the few things like abortion that keeps the left-right dialectic, the Republican-Democrat dialectic alive because of the Supreme Court argument, but because as a dialectic, it's effective in what it's doing is it's demanding action short of banning guns as a compromise. So after Sandy Hook, you expected a bunch of gun control laws to come down. But the what actually happened was Obama took out a hard-won provision from Obamacare where you could not, doctors, pediatricians could not ask families about gun ownership. That was quietly removed. Now they do it.
Really?
Just those little things that happened after Sandy Hook were more about surveillance and other things.
And that encourages you to put people in those jobs who don't like guns, who suspect guns and
what,
want
like
them removed.
Like pediatricians?
Do what?
Pediatricians? Yeah. Put who in what jobs? Well, actually, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if college admissions for medical school, which is highly limited, does have political profiles, although a lot of doctors are smart about that, but they're pre-existing doctors. They're not the post-Obamacare
yeah.
doctors. I don't know. So these shootings, I think, often are what I'm observing is emerging is they're using the dialectic to get other things passed. And we're all like, oh, at least they didn't take the guns. They didn't take the guns. Thank goodness. They didn't take the guns. They'll take everything else. Well, you should put crazy people in jail. I mean, obviously, you know, so the red flag movement, the red flag law movement is being led by Republicans. And every article that you say says, or at least supported by them, will say, finally, a bipartisan compromise on one common sense gun measure. But the mental health thing is the worst of all, because they can take anyone and put them away without due process. It's the worst of all.
Yeah.
It's the worst. I mean, we absolutely positively need the Fifth and Sixth Amendments. You have to have them. And this bypasses that. It's worse than the plea bargain strong-arming to get people in jail who may or may not have actually committed a crime. These are people who have not committed crimes yet, who don't even get the constitutional protections that accused criminals get.
Yeah, and the more that that's allowed to happen, the more they can apply this mental health standard to other areas.
Of course, of course. It only starts with the thing that's the most egregious. And then it's everything. It's the rights to see your kids, probably.
Are you a conspiracy theorist? Well, you have a mental problem.
Save that for another day, because I have, as long as your arm, a list of things that we should do it with the anti-vax hysteria movement.
Yeah.
Let's save that, like conspiracy hysteria and all that for a little special report. But I've noticed that with these shooting things, these shooting stories, there's always another agenda served. With Parkland, it did shut down the internet, that's for sure. But it started with these red flag laws, which absolutely, what was in place in Parkland at the time, if this guy had really been under police scrutiny 35 times for people calling, he would have been locked up. And he's a mental case. That's ridiculous. They have that stuff already. But there's also a lot of other things that are going down with these other shootings, like privacy and privilege violations are coming down, like doctor client, lawyer client, priest penitent, spousal. Though Columbine, I think, in Columbine, they're starting to say that at risk or identified youth need to see therapists, and that the government can monitor the either the conclusions of the therapist or whatever, and it follows them into adulthood. It's pretty scary. There's
what?
Mm-hmm. It's a Wall Street Journal article. I've tweeted it and posted it. Yeah, I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but
wow.
Yes, it's really scary. And another, the priest penitent, that's a law in California. They're trying to say if a penitent confesses to child molesting, the priest has to turn him in. Which, if they're going to do it for that, they're going to do it for murder and rape and everything. So that would mean confession goes away. And confession is actually a very useful tool in helping people atone. You can't even get a good confession if you are not committed to amending, and you would just not go.
I mean, it becomes a legal confession.
What is? What?
It would become a legal confession.
Yes, right, which you're never going to do. So it makes no sense. But the spousal thing, I think, was something that was broached with the Pulse nightclub. They put the wife on trial for, like, being complicit in it. She got off. They should have put the dad on trial.
Yeah.
Like, pictures of him in the White House.
He used to have a YouTube channel where he would say all kind of crazy stuff.
The Pulse shooter's dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, like, had deep intelligence connections. It was kooky. Due process is definitely in the crosshairs. You have Joe Manchin saying due process is killing us right now because that Pulse shooter was known to the FBI. And, you know, you can't keep someone in jail until they do something wrong. I mean, what kind of a system is that? It's like, well, I like it. Encryption. They want to make sure that your phones can be hacked into by them, which means they can be hacked into by others. That's what the San Bernardino shooting was exploited for. And the censorship. The Parkland definitely impacted the ability to make good searches on Google anyway. But you pointed out, Binkley, the live stream, the New Zealand shooter helped to make a call for a solution to the fact that live streaming is dangerous.
Yeah, they've already started restricting it, who can use it and how it's used.
I think that live streaming is essential. I think all government monitored cameras and audio should be live streamed.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they have a right to it without a warrant, then so do we. It means there is no legal requirement at all for constant surveillance. We own those cameras and we should see it. Similarly, I think all trials should be live streamed.
Yeah.
All discussion, if you want to do discussions of pleas or whatever, but let's just see it all and put the questions about these things to bed. But in none of those cases were there jury trials, so you don't get to fully vet what actually happened. So the solutions they offer us wouldn't necessarily impact cases like this. But I did want to get a couple of tweets, so go.
All right, I have a tweet from PolitiShark who says, I have no clue why you're saying Judge Napolitano has been a Trump backer. Nothing could be further from the truth.
I gave Judge Napolitano the benefit of the doubt for giving Trump the benefit of the doubt for a while. Stuff that I thought, and he was getting a little weird about some of his interpretations. I mean, technically he'd be right about this or that, but it didn't feel right to me. I thought there was something up with him. And after he had that big meeting with Trump, like as soon as Trump was inaugurated, I thought, geez, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that one. But the last straw for me with Judge Knapp was when he attested to the fact that Bill Barr was solid citizen, great guy, true blue patriot. Bill Barr really was bad news. I did a whole show or two on the many, many deep state activities and not Obama holdovers. Do not ruin that word for me. Deep state killed Kennedy. It is not Obama holdovers. But he's just knee deep in this stuff. And that Judge Knapp, he could say, I don't know anything about the guy, but to say that he knew him and that he was a good guy could not be true.
Yeah.
So I lost faith in Judge Knapp. But then more recently, he's absolutely right back, in the saddle. And I try not to hold people to too high a standard. I mean, there's some stuff that just gets you kicked off the darn air.
Well, he was Fox, right?
Huh?
He was kicked off for like a couple of weeks after he said the British were behind the Russian.
I don't know about that. I think that was a takeoff on something that was already out there when he made one of his last shows was how almost all terrorist plots are FBI setups. So the FBI finds some vulnerable guy, gives him a bomb, and then arrests him for having a bomb.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And that's when plea bargains are absolutely outrageous, because then you have these people who are mentally defective. They're entrapped, and they would never, I mean, they're probably facing a capital punishment or something close to that. They would never fight it in court. And then you see someone like Ross Ulbricht who does fight it and then gets his head handed to him on a silver platter. But so that's when Napolitano really got taken down and people thought it was for that. The more recent one I thought maybe was playing into the the trialectic, I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
Anyway, wrap it up after the break. This is Monica Perez.
Monica Perez.
Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality?
On News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
We are wrapping it up. Sorry to say. There's always so much more to talk about, which is actually what we do a lot of times on the podcast. So Binkley and I have a podcast that we post on thepropreport.com on Thursdays. But we also post this show commercial free on Wednesdays, also on thepropreport.com. And I put a lot of little tidbits up. Somebody just texted me. A mom finds her daughter 25 feet down a mountainside. I've noticed for weeks now, I noticed it like the third one. There are all these stories of people falling to their deaths. I don't understand it. So I'm going to give you a little hashtag what to watch out for. And you can go to thepropreport.com and see Binkley and I and listeners chime in with their thoughts about the headlines that are constantly bombarding us. So the headlines are often misleading, but we've got some great insights from our listeners on there. And we're always with an eye to defending our rights and protections against an overreaching government that is just looking to take more, and not for us. It's for somebody else. Anyway, so what do you want to add, Binkley? And then we'll wrap it up.
Subscribe to the Propaganda Report podcast. I will link it on Twitter.
Okay. At Freedom Act Radio.
That's right.
And I'm at Monica Perez Show. And then, but we also are kind of doing our own Twitter equivalent there on thepropreport.com. That's going to be super fun. Until next week, we will be back right here on WSB Saturday from 3 to 6. This is Monica Perez.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.